Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Tuesday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, we're on Fox Sports Radio, and we're on FS1. Very good show today. Joy Taylor is joining me. In fact, next hour, maybe later this hour, next hour I'm going to do one of my favorite segments I've done in a while.
Which is?
Blind resume.
You're
not going to believe what I will unveil in 1 hour. You will not believe it.
Blind resume is a little bit of trickery.
It's trickery. It's a little bit of a magic trick where you think you're going to see something, you're sure you're going to see something, and you don't see something.
I like blind resume because it keeps you honest.
Yeah, it takes away. People have biases,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it's a smack of reality. Well, or that's, whoa, that's not what I thought I was going to see. So it's, speaking of reality, Tim Tebow was cut on the worst roster in the NFL by his best coaching friend ever at a position that's not really where you put your most talented people. His career is over. They sold some jerseys. It's smart business. He can't play, and let's be honest, it's a little bit of a distraction, especially in the South. The media is not always accurate. I would admit that. I mean, I classify as media. The media isn't always accurate. And the media, sometimes there's a bias. I would admit that. I'm human. Sometimes I have confirmation bias. Something confirms what I want to be true. Of course, you have that too. Are you willing to admit that today? The media isn't always accurate, but they were 3-0 on Tebow. When the Denver Broncos defense and kicking game was winning games, the media said, dude can't play. We were right. When Tebow went to the Mets minor league system, guys like me said, it's a shtick. He can't play. He couldn't, and the Mets later admitted it was really a thing to sell tickets. And when he went to the Jags, we said, it'll sell some merch. It's very close to where he played college football. Even on a bad team, he is not close to an NFL tight end. And we were right, too. I mean, good God, Michael Jordan's the best basketball player probably ever. He took 2 years off, came back, rusty, lost in the second round, was a shadow of himself. That's Michael Jordan. Tim took 8 years off and changed positions. But what Tebow really is and has been for a long time is a great example of a real problem in America, that people no longer want the truth. They just want their version of the truth. You conservatives go to one channel, you liberals go to the other. You don't want the truth. You want your version of it. Little reminder that 99.5% of people currently on ventilators in hospitals in America are unvaccinated. Sorry if that doesn't connect with your Reddit board info. Belichick cut Tebow. Belichick's close friends with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer cut Tebow. He didn't want to do that. The Mets really wanted this to work. They really did. He hit .223 against double-A pitching. Listen, this is what we have in America. Everybody wants to point fingers. You have an agenda. You have an agenda. Nobody ever wants to look in the mirror and acknowledge they, too, have one. It's not an agenda when the other side is right. COVID is not the flu, and Tebow can't play professional sports. The agenda is not those ripping Tebow. And let's be honest, the criticism is usually soft-pedaled because he's a nice guy. He's hard not to like. But he got this tryout for one reason. Privilege. Nobody quits a sport 8 years later, gets an opportunity. Like nobody ever. It was a little privilege. And it didn't work. And Urban Meyer's a businessman too, probably foremost. And he let him go. But Tebow's fans have always pointed fingers. Always done that. It's time to go to the bathroom. Those mirrors still work. We just don't like to use them anymore. Tebow's not a pro athlete. He was never a pro athlete. He's a workout fanatic who's slow, bulky, was never a pro athlete in America. He's a Saturday athlete. He's not a Sunday athlete. You can go into any Gold's Gym in America and find a dozen Tim Tebows. They're probably just not as nice as Tim. It's over. It should be. And let's talk about Trevor Lawrence from this point forward. That's the future of the Jags. So we all knew, we talked a lot about when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick separated. Now, who won the divorce? There's no reason to rub it in. I think we know who won the divorce. But do you think if you ask them privately, I saw there's a new book out talking about the Patriots dynasty. They're doing a lot of talking about the old days. Brady, it seems, is now winning in the current days. One's looking through the windshield. One keeps glancing back through the rearview mirror. It's what losers often do in a divorce. Is there a franchise right now in the NFL that has a worse quarterback situation than New England? Houston, Philadelphia, maybe Denver. Not Washington. Ryan Fitzpatrick's better than two alternatives right now. Frankly, he is. You have Cam, a former playmaker who's beat up physically and a shell of his former self. And then you have a kid with a low ceiling who's not really ready to play. We know that, but he may instead, Mac Jones. Let's be honest now. Bill Belichick, before Brady and after Brady, is now 62 and 71 with a single playoff win. And New England's quarterback situation doesn't even make sense. Cam's a playmaker. Mac Jones is non-athletic. At least in Cleveland, Baker Mayfield's the starter. And Case Keenum is sort of a poor man's version of Baker Mayfield. That makes sense. Don't have to change the offense when he comes in. In Buffalo, Josh Allen's obviously the starter, but Mitch Trubisky's also very athletic. That makes sense. New England's quarterback situation doesn't even make sense. Old, beaten-up guy who's erratic, not very accurate, and a playmaker, and a guy who's the opposite. Yeah, it's harder than they thought. And now in the division, Buffalo has a significantly better quarterback situation and a roster. Miami has a steadier quarterback situation currently and a better roster. And the Jets have an outstanding GM who is in the last two drafts proven he's better at drafting the college players than Belichick is. Boy, did Tom Brady pick the perfect time to exit. He looked maybe at Buffalo's emergence. He knew how good Brian Flores would do down in Miami. He watched the previous two or three or five drafts with New England, tired of the arrogance of the system. Here's Cam Newton being asked if Belichick has told him he is the starter.
I mean, y'all sit up here asking silly questions to me, and I'm looking at y'all with the same thing. So I don't know what y'all want me to say. You're like, no, you know that. You know he hasn't said that. So for you to just ask the question, you know, it is what it is. So every single day I'm coming out here with the anticipation to just get better, and that's the only thing that I could do. So I can control that. I do know those things like that I can't worry about, because each and every day I don't necessarily care about who's starting. I mostly care about, you know, making sure that I put the best product out there for me. You know, as far as week one, we got so much to worry about prior to week one, and that's where my focus is right now.
I have no idea who's starting for New England, and that in itself is a huge problem. I'm not sure New England right now knows who's starting for New England. All right, so, you know, we've said this time and time again, is, you know, every sport has a different culture. Like in baseball, guys sign 10-year contracts. They have a minor league system you can stay in for years, even if you're good. The NBA, in a perfect world, honestly, you could probably go from the high school to the NBA, but everybody's a little uncomfortable with it. But you can be good enough in high school to a year later to play in the NBA. In the NFL, no. You needed minimum 3 years in college. That's a man's league. We don't want you to get hurt. Every sport has a different culture. But in the NBA, something that is always true, happened in Philadelphia, and they're getting burned because of it. And it is quite remarkable that people tried to make this thing that was always true, untrue, and it never is. And I'll explain that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Escape QuickBooks for NetSuite. Take control, visibility over your e-commerce, your financials, and more. Go to netsuite.com/herd, H-E-R-D, right now. So the Philadelphia 76ers signed Joel Embiid, the often injured but wildly talented center, to a new contract and extension that gives him $196 million, and they're now locked in for about 5 years. This comes, obviously, with a major risk. He was drafted in 2014. He has played in less than 50% of the games, 48%, and he was hurt in the playoffs last year. Philadelphia made the choice between Simmons and Embiid, and they chose the employee who is there, the highly compensated employee, who is there less than half the time. But in situations like this, we should all learn from it, right? If you were a GM in this sport, you'd look around and go, what's the trend? Here's the trend. It is a cautionary tale of when you have two stars and they don't get along, and you know it before everybody else does because you hear about it on the plane, you hear about it from an assistant coach, you kind of see it in the locker room or at practice, quietly get on the phone, call other teams, and move them. Because Philadelphia now is not going to get much for Ben Simmons. His indifference is frightening. He just doesn't appear to want to get better at his weaknesses, and Embiid is always hurt. Everybody thought they could fix this thing, and it surfaced 2 years ago. Brian Colangelo was sure he could fix it. Nelton Brand was sure he could fix it, and Sam Hinkie was sure he could fix it. And of course they couldn't, because NBA history tells you, even recent history, when two stars have an issue and don't get along, it never works. Durant and Westbrook, we can fix it. Pippen and Barkley in Houston, Kobe and Shaq, LeBron and Kyrie, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, Chris Paul and James Harden. I wrote 6-7 down this morning. I could give you another 8. Find me the example of two stars that don't get along. This isn't like real life where you go to therapy or a marriage counselor and you can get through things. There's intensity in sports, right? You get like 8 years to make your money, 8 years to hit it. You don't have 30 years to work on something. You got agents chirping in their ears. You got family members. You got coaches. You got shoe companies. The bottom line is when you see it going south, and teams always see it before guys like me see it, before the media sees it. You see it at practice. You hear it in the locker room. You always got a veteran or two in the locker room that chirps to a coach. Isn't great. You hear it on the plane. You see it on the plane. I mean, Embiid and Simmons last year's All-Star game wouldn't share a private jet for 2.5 hours to fly to the game. I mean, those guys fly big jets. You could sit in one side, one in the back, one in the front. No, wouldn't do it. So this is another example. You know, I can sit here and criticize Philadelphia, but Daryl Morey took it over. Everybody tried to make it work. 3 different GMs. It didn't work. It never does. The NBA has got a lot of things I love about it. I talk about it all the time. But it is an ego league. Players now make millions in social media, 8 figures in shoe deals, 8-9 figures in basketball. They have power. It's always been a labor-first league over a coach's or a GM's league. And when the stars don't get along, there's no real motivation to fix it. I'll just go elsewhere and make my money and be happier and be the guy on the team. So cautionary tale, the Sixers made their choice and it comes with major risk. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, for the fourth time in the last six seasons, Alabama is first in the preseason AP Top 25 poll. They took the top spot with 47 of the 63 first place votes coming off of their national championship. Here's a look at the rest of the top 10. Alabama 1, followed by Oklahoma, Clemson at 3, Ohio State 4, Georgia rounds up the top 5, Texas A&M 6, Iowa State, Cincinnati, Notre Dame, and North Carolina.
Do you know Clemson faces one ranked team all year, and that is in their opener against Georgia? So whether or not I think Clemson is the best team, and I think you could certainly make an argument they are, they're going to end up in that playoff. So even if they lose to Georgia, they're going to roll over the rest of their team. They'll probably have one or two close games. Syracuse, for some reason, always plays Clemson close. They have a good coach. But when that's the reality. We've talked about college football's number one issue, which is they don't have a CEO.
Right.
So they don't have a schedule maker like the NBA does, or baseball, or the MLS, or hockey. Or UFC, by the way. Dana White makes the fight, so you get competitive fights. So Clemson plays one ranked team. That game's about a three-point swing either way. I'd probably take Clemson because I love their quarterback and coach. But you kind of know, I'm going to fill in, Clemson is going to be in the playoff. I'm going to do that today. I don't know about everybody else, but Clemson's going to be in.
Well, look, I also like Oklahoma's quarterback as well.
Oh, he's great.
So the one thing, have you seen the first week of college football? Like the first
Labor Day,
you
mean?
Games?
Or the weekend after that, or Labor Day?
Yeah, probably like the weekend. Opening weekends with like Clemson and Georgia play. And
yeah,
it's like Bama and Miami. And it's a pretty amazing weekend to start off. Yes. And it'll be interesting. I do love Clemson's quarterback as well, DJ Uiagalelei.
He played out here in Los Angeles. He is an insane.
Well, we saw a little bit of him last year, and you could see that he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, his only issue is everything's a fastball. He's got to learn a little tempo.
Yeah.
But in terms of talent, size, arm, you're like.
And you got Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma, who I love.
Probably go number one in the draft.
Probably. We don't know who's going to be the quarterback at Ohio State yet. They're saying C.J. Stroud is winning the battle there. You have J.T. Daniels at Georgia and Bryce Young at Alabama, but it's I'm really excited for this college football season.
Yeah.
So Justin Fields had a strong first season game with the Bears last weekend, also a very strong reception from Chicago Bears fans. Matt Nagy is still committing to Andy Dalton as the team's week one quarterback, but he said Fields will be getting more time with the starters as they move forward in practice.
You need to be able to see, okay, not even so much Adam to see that with his own players, because he gets some of that in practice right now. He's getting some of that, but also it can be good to see what he does versus the first team defense, you know. So when you combine both of those together, that's again kind of part of the evaluation process. So yes, I'd say a little bit of that with his own players, and then also who he's playing against.
I understand you don't want to throw Justin Fields to the wolves, so to speak.
The wolves.
Week one. But he's got to go up against those wolves eventually.
I know.
And so this is how I look at it with rookie quarterbacks. Every other position that's drafted in the first round, you expect to play right away. Now, you might not expect them to be fully developed.
Right.
You might not expect them to come into the league and win Offensive Rookie of the Year, or be at what they're going to be in their fourth or fifth year with experience and those, you know, NFL calluses adjusting to the speed, all of that. But you're a first-round quarterback for a reason. It's because they need a quarterback. If they felt like Andy Dalton was the future of the team, they wouldn't have taken Justin Fields. So if you don't feel like Justin Fields is ready week one, he's not developed enough, he's not picking up the playbook, he hasn't adjusted to the speed, and he needs more reps in practice, fine. You're the one seeing that.
Right.
But I just don't like this idea that they all need to be, like, coddled, and you don't want him to go up against Aaron Donald, like, he's going to go up against Aaron Donald eventually. So what is the, if it's 1 or 2 weeks, like, are you really learning that much?
Here's what I would say. When my kids get their license, I don't advise them to jump on the 405 the first time they're behind the wheel. We teach them in an empty parking lot. We wait till it's like after 6, 7 at night. There's nobody in a business center parking lot. We drive around a lot. They know how to drive the car, but I don't want to say, hey, merge onto the 405 and learn how to drive. That's, I think, what quarterbacks is. Listen, it's the hardest thing in American sports to do now. It used to be hit a baseball. Now it's like play quarterback in the NFL as a rookie. Like, go play. So it's not that he can't play. It's like we would like to ultimately not ruin you above the shoulders and have you gun-shy because you get... So it's a matter of like the Patrick Mahomes situation I thought was wonderful. By the way, two of the best quarterbacks in the league, Rodgers and Mahomes, kind of watched a mentor for a while.
But that was a great mentor situation. Like Alex Smith.
Well, Andy Dalton's
known
a good.
For that.
Well, I think Andy's a pretty good guy.
But he also is demanding that he is the starter. Like he is saying he is the starter, and I get it. It's competition, right? But it doesn't feel the same as sitting behind Brett Favre. It doesn't feel the same as sitting behind someone like Alex Smith. Like, if you feel like your team is not good enough to protect a rookie quarterback, like in a situation like Cincinnati, but they didn't have a choice, right? Like, he's going to get injured. The offensive line isn't where it needs to be. We don't have enough pieces. So let's just keep the veteran out there until we feel like he's really ready to overcome that.
Okay, here's another example. UFC. You don't just throw a guy in with Conor McGregor. Like, you have him fight tomato can, and all of a sudden, like, your eighth fight, you give him a real fight, but one he should win if you think he's talented. Like, we're going to give you a guy that's going to hit you back, and then by about your 12th fight, you're like, okay, now we're going to put you in the cage. We don't know what's going to happen in the octagon. So maybe it's because I'm a parent. I always err on the side of, we got time here. Let's let this thing breathe.
Yeah.
That's me as a parent.
I'm an auntie, so I'm like, get out there and figure it out. We'll buy you some ice cream afterwards. You'll be all right. So the Eagles have not officially named Jalen Hurts the team starter, but the rest of the players have rallied around him as the star. Reports from camp is that there's a fast-growing sentiment that Hurts is undoubtedly viewed as the franchise quarterback by his teammates.
Well, who's his back? Who the hell's Flacco? Who is the backup?
That is...
I think it's Flacco.
It's Flacco, yeah.
Yeah.
So his work ethics, intangibles, and overall skill have captured the locker room, allegedly, and players have been consistently blown away by him on and off the field. Now, I talked about this last week where I don't really understand what the hesitation is with saying that Jalen Hurts is a starter because Flacco is your backup.
Now this situation... to me, is an obvious one. Like,
well,
this
Jalen's
one is
also in his second year.
And there's really not a competent quarterback behind him. Competent. Flacco's done. He's washed.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I guess I would put Andy Dalton slightly above Flacco.
Okay, the other thing is Chicago has been a playoff team recently. Philadelphia's a mess. They're a fourth-place team. So I got nothing to lose.
Well, you can't tell Philadelphia that. They're in a rebuilding situation.
They've been for 2 years. But I think in Philadelphia's case, we're not a Super Bowl team, okay? We're not probably a playoff team. Let's get the young guy ready. I think Chicago looks at themselves and says, we finished 8-8 last year, and we got a way better quarterback this year. I think Chicago looks at themselves as, let's not lose early.
But like, that's kind of the situation that Miami was in last year with Tua. Like, you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's a competent quarterback, right? We know he's not the future, but he's competent. And then you have a young guy coming in, and you do this, like, seesaw thing where, like, are you going to make the playoffs? Do you feel like you can win multiple playoff games with Andy Dalton? No. So what is the value of not getting a full evaluation and giving Justin Fields that extra experience?
Well,
if you feel like he's going to fall apart, then you probably picked the wrong guy, no?
Well, that depends on if you feel that you can get any evaluation out of scrimmages and practice and preseason, which I think teams do. If you don't feel you can get any evaluation beyond a game, then just play him. But I do think coaches feel like, I mean, you got to make cuts all the time. So you're getting something out of scrimmages. You're getting something out of practice. Some evaluation.
We got some evaluation from Jacksonville. So, yeah, you're right.
Oh, okay. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right. I got a lot of stuff today. I'm going to blow you away at the top of the next hour. It's blind resume. We do blind resume about three times a year, four times a year, and it takes away. It's surprising to me. I don't have the answers on all this stuff. So a lot of times the staff will do it and not tell me who they're going to unveil. And it's fun because it's like, wow, you learn something, right? You find a little treasure of information. With that, we go to Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. By the way, we were just talking about Justin Fields. And I use, as a dad, I use the example of, I teach my kid how to drive. I don't ask him to go in the 405. We go to a parking lot of a big insurance firm at night. There's nobody there in 1,000. And we drive around through the, you know. And so I look at Justin Fields and I'm like, Rams on the road, best defense opener. Let's give Andy that one. But am I wrong? Should we just throw Justin Fields out there?
No, I don't think you're wrong, Colin. I mean, I think I always look at it like there's so many more things that go into making that decision. Preseason games are great, really joint practices, what you do in practice. That's where a lot of the learning and where a lot of the evaluation, basically bears out. And I think one thing that you have to understand is, as a rookie quarterback, especially coming out of the college game, where you didn't command a huddle, you didn't call plays in the huddle. You know, you look over to the sideline and you got Red Barn Chicken, and you run Red Barn Chicken, right? I mean, that's part of the learning curve. The other thing is, do you understand the protections? Do you know how to get out of a bad play? Can you call the play and then go through your progressions, read the defense, and make sure you know where everybody is? You know, pre-snap, post-snap, they change. There's a lot that goes into this. And I will tell you one thing that doesn't get made, not a lot of people make a big deal out of it, but it's a huge deal. If you're not great with your cadence, that's the one weapon we have as an offense, is cadence. The offense is based on rhythm of cadence. The quarterback controls that. If you've always been in shotgun and clapped your hands and you don't have that, there's a large portion. There's 10 guys that aren't on the same page, and you can't have. You just can't have success. So just keep this in mind when you're thinking about preseason, you're watching these young quarterbacks. Just remember, there are two teams that went 0-16 in this league, right? The 2008 Detroit Lions and the 2017 Cleveland Browns. They were both 4-0 in the preseason, both of those teams. So let's just, pump our brakes on the rookies. They'll get their opportunity. But right now, who gives you the best chance to win if you're Matt Nagy in Chicago? And it's probably Andy Dalton. I'm not saying long term, but in the short term.
Listen, we don't have to talk about this forever, but on the Tebow situation, my takeaway has always been, great kid, but it's really hard to make the NFL. And you can be a great player on Saturday. A great player. Mm. Tebow's
sure
probably the biggest star in the history of the SEC. And suddenly you go, I mean, Reggie Bush is the best running back I've ever seen in the Pac-12. But he wasn't the biggest star running back in the NFL. Like, Saturdays are different than Sundays. But I did think all of his opportunities, like the baseball one I got, the football stuff. Listen, they put him in the first round. Denver's going to make it work, right? Or try to. This one felt like kind of a reach to me. I mean, it's hard to block for blockers. It's really hard to block for former quarterbacks. So I just didn't. I thought this was a little bit a little silly. That was my interpretation. What did you make of him getting cut this morning, and what did you make of the opportunity?
Well, I think I'm with you on the opportunity. He got an opportunity because he has a relationship. There's no greater skill in football than moving a man from point A to point B against his will. It's not natural, right? It's something that you have to constantly work on. And it's a skill like any other skill. You don't create movement on the line of scrimmage. You don't create any of that stuff because – you're bigger, badder, and stronger. Everybody's big. Everybody's bad. Everybody's strong. Everybody has bad intentions. So it comes down to your footwork, your technique, foot strike, ankle over foot, knee over ankle, hip over knee. That's how you create leverage, and you strike an up, not out. And all those things, I mean, it's the timing, it's the sequencing of your feet. All those things are exceptionally hard to do. And, you're not going to come out at 34 when you've never done it. It's not natural and say, oh, I'm going to, here I go. Let's go out there and do this. So I thought that was a bit of a gimmick, but that's the relationship he and Urban Meyer had. I thought Urban Meyer needed to make this move just to gain credibility in his own locker room.
Yeah.
I mean, he hired the coach that had a background, an issue. They had to fire that guy. He's come out and drafted a guy first overall in Trevor Lawrence, and he's still saying, well, it's a quarterback battle. And you're like, come on, you guys are the Jacksonville freaking Jaguars. There's no quarterback battle going on there. So I just thought, come out, be honest. And for your players, when you see a guy that doesn't belong, if you continue to string that guy along, then the players in your own locker room look at you like, this guy has no clue what he's doing. So I thought from a credibility standpoint, Urban Meyer did what he had to do. And that was, to let Tebow go.
I thought Trey Lance situation was interesting this weekend. I said every quarterback I watched, and I'll include Jordan Love in the rookie class, though he's not because I just hadn't seen him. So six different guys, they all showed me something. All of them showed me like, that's why he's a first round quarterback. All of them. But the one thing I did see from all the rookie quarterbacks when I looked at Trey Lance, I'm like, okay, in the last 580 days, he's completed 20 passes. Like, he needs to be in the batting cage. Like, he really right. And it's not a knock on him because I think he has great potential. But that was the one young guy I'm like, no, he's not ready. That division's too good. He's not ready yet. Your thoughts on what you saw with him?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think Trey Lance obviously has unbelievable talent,
yes.
right? You know what talent does? Or talent gives you an opportunity. That's all talent does. It gives you an opportunity. You know, I always joke around that talent's wasted on talented people, right? So my deal is the talent gives you the opportunity. It's the work and who you are that either makes it or breaks it for you. If you're willing to put in the work and to understand and recognize that I have been blessed by the hand of God to have this talent, but that entitles me to an opportunity. That's it. And now I have to go to work. And so much of playing quarterback is from the neck up, so much more than it is from the neck down. And we've seen it. The guy who's dominated this league for 20 plus years is Tom Brady. And that guy couldn't beat me in a foot race. I mean, well, maybe he could beat me, but he couldn't beat you, Colin, in a foot race. I guarantee. And I guarantee he can't beat Joy in a foot race either. So it's not about athleticism, although athleticism is the easiest thing to see. And it really is about the nuance of play calling, the nuance of getting your quarterback in a position, and the nuance of that guy understanding, you know, what you see in preseason, and you should be good in preseason, because what they show you in pre-snap is what they show you in post-snap. And so it makes the reads easy. When you get in the regular season, what you see pre-snap is never what they play post-snap,
right.
ever.
Right.
And so there's a difference, right? You have to be able to adjust. You turn your back to the defense, you flip it, you flip it back around. Are they in something completely different? Can you diagnose that in 1001 and understand where each guy in that particular coverage is supposed to be? Where are my hook defenders? Where are my curl defenders? Who's my flat defender? You know, what does it look like on the other side? If I get it on this side, what does it look like on the other side? You got to process that in under a second and then make the right decision. That is, I mean, it's so incredibly tough. All the positions are tough, but the quarterback position is, it's ridiculous what those guys are asked to do and what they're asked to process.
Okay, the big lopsided game of the weekend. Of course, you do morning radio in Denver. The Broncos dismantled Minnesota. Your gut, because we've said before, we know they're talented. They've got all sorts of offensive weapons. Who's going to start at quarterback? Who would you start at quarterback? And what did you make of this weekend?
Yeah, it was a big weekend, and obviously, Drew Lock looked phenomenal. And again, part of that is, you know, what you saw pre-snap is exactly what you got post-snap, right? And he made some great throws, don't get me wrong. Take away the 80-yard post, any quarterback in the league will make that throw. That's one of the easiest throws in football. There were some layered routes, and there were some opportunities for Drew Lock to go, you know, from his first read to a second read, all the way back to a third read, complete one to Jerry Jeudy on a third down, get some blocking downfield, make an explosive play. So there were a lot of really, really good things. I think I always weigh this kind of differently. I want to see him come out in Seattle as the number two and how he plays, because you look at the way he played, he almost put, you know, the knockout punch. Teddy just came in after that and was steady Eddie, really good, did exactly what he was asked to do, didn't try to make, you know, make the team or make the decision for the coaches in one play. And how does Drew respond? If Teddy goes out and plays really well, does Drew respond by panicking and trying to make the big play and instead make the big mistake? Or does he approach it like Teddy? I think this week obviously is huge. Right now, if I were grading it, because you are a coach who has never won a game, again, I'll repeat, you're a coach in Vic Fangio that's never won a game in September, right? I mean, what's the song, Wake Me Up When September Ends? I mean, at some point, right, at some point, you got to say, who gives us the best chance to win? We open up with the Giants, and the Giants are one of the most complex defenses, especially on their back end in football. Does Teddy give us the best chance to win? So right now I would say Teddy has a very slight advantage, but obviously Drew Lock is exceptionally talented. I think he's matured and he has taken on the study. And I think this competition has been the best thing for him, not to be anointed, but have to go out there and fight for a position.
Mark Schlereth, 3 Super Bowl rings. Good seeing you, buddy.
Likewise, man. Take care. Yep. See you guys.
Broncos look great. By the way, I'm not quite ready to do the greatest segment I've done in a month, but I'm very close. I'll do it at the very top of the hour. And I'm getting very close. Remember, I lay out my NFL predictions, all the standings, and I get two amendments. Not two teams, but I get 2 days where I get to go, okay, I'm going to make changes. I don't get just two changes. It's not like I say, I'm going to give the Jets a win and Denver a loss. I get two opportunities to amend my initial prediction.
Right.
Okay, not just like, ooh, I'll tweak a little W there. I go big board on it, so we're going to talk about that too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, 3-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Jersey Mike's has a new sub. It's called the Grilled Portobello Mushroom and Swiss. Try it today, Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. Tim Tebow was cut, first cuts. He was going to battle for the fourth string tight end. He was out of the sport for 8 years, tried to come back, kind of a silly reach. Urban Meyer quickly moved off it, and Urban Meyer loves the guy. Let's be honest about the Tebow story. It is mostly a Southern story. Now, initially, it was a national story. The baseball story was, you know, mostly people in the South defending him. It is now mostly an SEC story. That's the only group of people who are still really defending him. You know, today they want to talk about other stuff. Tim Tebow got cut, period. End of story. It's not about any other quarterback or any other team. That's the story today, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. But I think part of why the South has always struggled with Tebow is because the SEC defines the South's football passion. They love the SEC, and it's the best football conference, and they love their Saturdays more than they love their Sundays. But Tim Tebow is another example, and there's lots of them, of a great Saturday player who was never close to being a Sunday player. Let's take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Tebow's the biggest star in the SEC. There is no second place. There is literally no second place. If you say Johnny Manziel, you're kidding yourself. He's the biggest star in the SEC times 10. No other conference has a player that defines culturally and playing more than its conference than Tebow in the South. He is a great college player. Great, great, great. All great. Leader, player, great, great, great. But Saturdays aren't Sundays. And I'll give you an example. Let's look at the best team in football, easily the best roster, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Here's where their 10 big players, they're really go-to guys, went to college. Their quarterback went to Michigan from the Big Ten. Their best running back's a Pac-12 guy. Ronald Jones, easily their best back. Their best receiver, you can say Mike Evans went to the SEC, but he originally signed with Texas A&M when they were in the Big 12. Chris Godwin, Big Ten. Gronk, Pac-12. Tristan Wirfs, Big Ten. Ali Marpet, Liberty League. It's a Division III Hobart. Devin White's their one great player, SEC, LSU, Levante David, Big Ten, Big 12, Shaq Barrett, Mountain West. That's the most talented football team in the NFL. One true SEC guy, Devin White. Because Mike Evans signed with A&M when they were a Big 12 team. They transitioned, so did he, to the SEC. Like, if college football was the NFL, then why of the last 10 quarterbacks who have played in the Super Bowl, none have been from the SEC? The 14 quarterbacks who made the playoffs last year, none were from the SEC. That's Saturday football. The last 5 MVPs of the NFL quarterbacked at Cal, Louisville, Texas Tech, Michigan, and Boston College. The 3 greatest wide receivers I've ever seen went to Mississippi Valley State, Tennessee, Chattanooga, and Marshall. Okay. Walter Payton's the best running back I've ever seen. I think he went to Jackson State. Saturday is not Sunday. And Tebow is the greatest SEC player ever. He's the most important. He's the most discussed. He sold the most merchandise. He is the most everything, and he's a really good guy. But being a star on Saturday doesn't mean much. Half of Nick Saban's guys that go to the NFL underachieve, get cut, can't play, or overpaid. And they're easily the most dominant college football program I've ever seen for a decade. So don't take it personally. Big on Saturday does not mean great on Sunday. Look around this league. A majority of the great, best tight end went to Cincinnati. The best quarterbacks went to Cal, Wisconsin, backed up at Michigan, Texas Tech, Wyoming, Oregon. Saturday matters too, just not for the Sunday league. The Herd.